Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Alicia Hughes. Ms. Hughes, please go ahead.
Thank you, Vicki, and welcome everyone to this week's NTRA teleconference on this year's Road to the Triple Crown. This week we've got 3 scheduled guests to catch up with in advance of the last weekend of major prep races on the road to the Kentucky Derby. This Saturday features the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn Park, which is the final 100-point qualifier towards the first Saturday in May. And Sunday card in Hot Springs has older fillies and mares in the spotlight in the Grade 1 Apple Blossom handicap. One of the best stories that has emerged in this parody-filled prep season so far has been that of veteran jockey John Court. Court, who has long been one of the Class C's members in the jock room, delivered a picture-perfect ride on Long Range Toddy to capture the first division of the Rebel Stakes on March 16th over Improbable. Court, who has had 3 prior mounts in the Derby, is aiming to lock down his 4th start in the Classic when he guides Long Range Toddy again this weekend in the Arkansas Derby. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Alicia.
Now, the Rebel Stakes marked the first time that you had been aboard Long Range Toddy. What did Steve Atkinson kind of tell you about him going in, and how did it compare to the feeling that he gave you in that race?
Well, we just kind of reiterated on some of the conversation we had when I worked the horse one morning and over basically his style of running and the way he would cooperate, that he was a kind horse. And there wasn't a lot to be said, but the pressure was there that, we need to go out there and win this race. And that's what we did. And what I felt was I was delighted that I beat Baffert on Improbable. And at the same time, I knew I secured a position for Long Range Toddy in the Kentucky Derby, but yet we still had another event to go through, the Arkansas Derby. So here we are.
And yeah, and the good folks at Churchill Downs tell me that you are set to become, at age 58, the oldest jockey to ever ride in the Derby. You know, we obviously have seen jockeys like Mike Smith, who, you know, at his age, riding as well as he ever has in his storied career. What do you think has been the key, not just for you personally, for your longevity, but being able to kind of perform at the highest levels at a time when maybe some people think you should be in the twilight of your career?
Yeah, I come across this subject matter a lot. I think I've been blessed. I've been fortunate to have the gift to do and the talent to be able to participate on a regular basis. I've taken care of myself, and I've been very, as I said, blessed that, you know, I can compete at this level and win races and at the top category of this top of caliber of horses. So it's awesome.
Thanks, John. And now I will throw it back to Vicki to see if we have any questions from our media.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And we'll go first to Art Wilson with Southern California News Group.
Yes, John, what is it about Long Range Toddy that makes you think you'd be successful at the mile and a quarter of the Derby?
Well, I believe his bloodlines indicate that he can go further, and the intelligent level. For the first time I swung a leg over after I had been told he was kind and intelligent, that impressed me. And then after working, I realized he had the talent that it would take to be running at the caliber level he's racing at, so...
Also, I'm curious, you rode out in California for quite a while, and California may be moving toward a no-whip rule. Being a rider, what's your opinion on that?
Well,
I'm an old school guy, and I believe that the horse should have the whip. I don't think it should be abused. I think it's way overrated that it is abusive, because they're very equine friendly. And second of all, if you would have watched the Santa Anita Derby, if they'd had no whips, I think you would have seen a totally different race there, and probably considerably boring, in my opinion. And I just think the whips are already regulated, and I think there's a large majority of people out there feel like that it's abusive, and I just don't share that opinion with them.
Right. Okay, thanks. Best of luck to you,
John. I will say that they have no whips in Norway, and I have watched some of these no-whip races, and I find them to be something that is not entertaining to me, and I've always, since I was a child, fascinated with horse racing.
Would you be in favor of something similar to an international rule?
I can't say. I'd have to look more at the details and see where the favor would fall with that. I couldn't agree to anything like that. It's too wide open.
Right. Okay, thanks. Good luck to you, John.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we're going next to Tom Ticho with Horse Race Insider.
Yeah, hi, John. I'd like to just pick up on something you just said. Without the whips you said last week in the Santa Anita Derby, would have been a totally different race. In what way?
I just think the horses would have lined up differently and got around there, and I don't think that the winner necessarily, under the perfect persuasion effort of Mike Smith, would have necessarily got up in time. And that's my opinion.
Fine, that's just what I just wanted to hear that. Thank you.
Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we have no further questions at this time.
John, before we let you go, I just had a couple of other quick questions for you. All three of your Derby mounts have come within the last 8 years of your career, obviously, starting with Arch in 2011. Was there ever a point in your career prior to that where you wondered if it was going to happen for you to ever get a start in that race, or were you always kind of quietly confident that if you just stayed the course that you would finally one day have your Derby starter?
Well, I would say I was quietly confident, because as long as I'm healthy and able to compete at the level and have the visitation to the winner's circle and have the opportunity to ride these big races, I felt the dream was always still alive, even though I know as well as anyone that my age comes into play for a lot of people, but it doesn't come into play as much for me as much as it does other people. Because I do
know,
hear that subject matter about my age quite regularly.
I know you keep yourself in extremely great shape. You're riding motorcycles, you know, and all of that, too. Have you set a timetable for yourself at all of how long you want to keep riding, or is it just as long as it feels good and as long as you're doing well, you're going to keep going?
Yeah, as long as it feels good and I'm doing well, I'll keep going. I hope I can not be forced out of the game by injury or some other circumstances. Some of the subject matter that seems to come up lately, as it just did on this show. I've been in this game for over 40 years. I'm working past through my over 38 years of racing on a professional level, and I know there's changes coming, but even with the changes, I'd still like to be able to enjoy this industry as much as I have loved it and be able to step down gracefully at my timing.
Is there anything from your past ride, from your past Derby experience that you kind of take and put forward, looking forward potentially to this year?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I learned from the past is sometimes the predictable never will happen, and then sometimes some things are executed textbook style. So you just got to be prepared, never underestimate your opposition, and be, as I said, prepare, sober, you know, sound mind and physically fit, and then just apply yourself. Well, let's do it.
Sounds good, John. I said, appreciate your time as always. Continue best of luck with everything. Like I said, we look forward to seeing you to deliver another top ride this weekend.
Well, thank you.
I do apologize. We do have another question in queue. Oh, perfect. Go ahead. It's come from Rich Rosenblatt with U.S. Racing.
Hi, John. I just wanted to ask you, with all the years that you've been riding, have you ever gotten to the point where you were on a contender and, I don't know, maybe because trainers or owners wanted to go a different way, you had a chance to ride, you rode a contender and then did not ride Derby?
Absolutely. I've seen many horses roll right into the Kentucky Derby and had another rider on it. And for whatever reasons, I've experienced that on several different occasions. So it's okay. I mean, it was painful the first time or two it happened. And, of course, I don't like it. But I'm okay. If something happens like that, I'm seasoned enough with the experience of knowing that that's part of the game. And that's when I signed on for this, that's a possibility.
What was the first horse? Do you mind recalling?
Optimizer.
Right. Okay. And that was that one of your bigger disappointments until you just kind of got used to
the first
horse
I was taken off. Oh, the first horse I'm taken off of.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Heck, I don't necessarily. Okay. I have to sit down there and hit the Rolodex. Hit the Rolodex.
Good.
I put that stuff out of my mind, and I remember some of the good things, and there's a lot of things I should remember, but I don't remember, so if it's significant, I can recall, but I can't remember the first one, and I really not like to go over some of the most recent horses, but I did enjoy Lion of David, and Bejarano rode the horse. He's a Lionheart, and he beat Super Saver. If you could watch every Super Saver gets by me, and then I come back and nail him at the wire.
Mm-hmm.
And Super Saver went on to win the Kentucky Derby, but that was an exciting experience. And you know, that one I kind of knew going in that I might not be able to get to ride him, but at least I got to swing a leg over him and win the Arkansas Derby. And I just know that there was a big following and a Facebook page about keeping me on the horse, and I was really wanting to squelch that because I knew and understood. But the general public were pulling for me, and that was really nice on their part that I had such a strong fan base that they put a Facebook page up and a lot of people commented, and they were sharing quite a bit of their emotional opinions, which I was, as I said, trying to keep quiet and keep people cooled out. And they were like, how are you taking it so good? And I was like, well, I've been here before. I can laugh about it.
Good.
I like that car.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And best of luck to you on Saturday.
No, thank you.
And we have no further questions at this time.
John, once again, wanted to thank you again for taking the time out to come on and speak with us today. Like I said, you're a class act as always. It's been a pleasure to have you on. And like I said, we'll be watching for you this weekend for hopefully continued best of luck.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, John.
All right, bye-bye.
And next up, we're going to go to owner Jeff Bloom, a man who has enjoyed success in all corners of this industry, from his time as a jockey to serving as racing manager to marketing and media relations consultant and even broadcaster. This weekend, the managing director of Bloom Racing will be cheering on his multiple Grade 1 winner, Midnight Jizu, when he heads up another salty field in this weekend's Apple Blossom Handicap. Midnight Jizu is coming off a win in the Azuri Stakes at Oaklawn, where she invested in great fields that included fellow Grade 1 winner Elate and champion sprinter Shamrock Rose last time out. Jeff, thank you for being on our call this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
After the Azuri, said that Midnight Jizu proved her quality. Given some of the tough beats that she had during her sophomore year, how satisfying was it and how special was it to see her really take that next step as an older filly now?
Well, it's always nice to come into their four-year-old campaign and see them developing and continue to be stronger and better. She had such a remarkable run as a three-year-old, and so... you know, we expected to see her move forward, but you never really know till you start the season off. And as you said, the field that was assembled for the Azari, you just don't expect to have to have three other grade one winners in a race like that. So for her to come out on top and to perform the way she did was definitely gratifying. And, you know, she's just such a lovely filly that continues to do everything you ask of her. And it's incredibly exciting to see that she's actually seeming to get better and stronger.
Well, yeah, and, you know, to talk about that again, like you said, she's such a hard trying filly. She always shows up. She never runs a bad race. She always trains well. But was Steve telling you that he was seeing anything, any kind of changes in her or any kind of, you know, kind of tangible differences that let him know that she was indeed getting better now, you know, as she gets her four-year-old season off on her leg?
Yeah, you know, Steve's a real fan of the filly, as are we. And he had continued to communicate how impressed he had been with her after coming out of the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, we gave her just that little bit of a breather, but he said, you know, when we really started to kick it into overdrive with her to get her ready to start the year off, she was just exhibiting a different level of confidence in the way that she carries herself, in the way that she was training. And so to see that transfer over onto the racetrack during the race, you know, it's just such a nice thing. And Steve had been, Steve and his entire team had been just really high on how she had been training. And so, you know, you hope that just continues on. And she's, you know, we say this, but she's one of those horses that really does enjoy her job. She loves to go out there and train, and the way that she puts herself in races and fights off the competition, just, you know, it becomes quite apparent how much she enjoys her job when you see her doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. I said she's a tough girl, and I said she shows up every single time and always. I said, you know, she always gives just a great effort there. So, Jeff, like I said, we're going to pause now and throw it back to Vicki and see if we have any questions in the queue from the media.
Again, press *1 to ask a question. And we'll go first to Art Rosa in the Southern California News Group.
Yes, Jeff. You have some really good horses, obviously. Any of them that come to mind that have been as consistent as Midnight Visa?
You know, one of my first horses, Majestic City, was a horse that definitely showed up every time you let him over there. And he was another horse that had some real tough beats, some close misses that, you know, you just felt like he was so close to really crossing over. But in terms of a horse that just has that level of consistency, I mean, she's certainly at the top of the list, I'd have to look back to Majestic City as one that I would, you know, put fairly close in terms of just that ability to just be there every time and show up.
Other than obviously the fact that you can run fast, to make a horse that consistent, are there any intangibles that they need to have?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, you look, you know, when you're trying to identify these horses and bring them into your stable, you know, what are the attributes that make a horse, you know, be a good horse? And so there are certain things that you just can't identify or I guess, train into them. And you know, the really good horses have it. But in terms of what makes her so special, I mean, it's just she's got such an incredible mind and presence about her. She's a pleasure to be around, you know, around the barn area. Nothing really fazes her, but then she's a real tiger when she gets out there on the racetrack, and she knows when to rein it in. And so, you know, all those other pieces about, you know, what the pedigree is and how they're put together, all the pieces of Midnight Visa just really fit the right way, both the mental aspects and the physical attributes. And you know, she just, it's just one of those things about her desire and her ability to go out there and constantly perform at that level. And you know, I can't stress enough the incredible job Steve and his entire team have done to continue to keep her at this level and actually getting her to get even better than she was you know, coming into this year.
Right, right. And my final question, Jeff, I got some thoughts from John Cord on this. I wanted to ask you, since you've had a huge presence in California and you're a former jockey yourself, what are your thoughts on California possibly moving to the no work rule?
I'm not a fan. I don't think it's a good idea for a number of different reasons. I do think it's important to police and in particular have some oversight in terms of preventing the abuse or overuse of a whip. But for a number of reasons, I think it's incredibly important for jockeys to have the whip as a tool to not only be able to prevent certain situations from happening during the course of the race, but to also be able to have that tool available to them should a situation arise where they need to be able to get the horse to react in a situation that other horses are doing certain things. So I think with the safety whips or the new poppers that they've implemented on the whips that they have today, it's more the use of a tool that really isn't causing any harm or pain to horses, more just the actual popping sound and the visibility of the whip, you know, in those situations. So, I mean, I personally think it's a big mistake to experiment with the no whip, and I don't imagine that that'll be something that'll be in favor of many of the riders. I do think it's, you know, of course, always important to make sure that you're monitoring all those different aspects of the welfare of the horses and making sure that, you know, riders aren't taking advantage of situations. But I think the whip is just an important tool, and it's part of the actual act of the race and the actions that go on during the course of the race.
Okay, thanks for your thoughts, Jeff.
Sure.
Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And we'll go next to Tom Gito with Horse Race Insider.
Jeff, good. Your horse and your filly and Monomoy Girl have developed into quite a rival relationship. I know she has issues right now. As a competitor, can you wait to take her on this season, or would you rather just go your own way and let it happen in the Breeders' Cup?
Well, look, it's always nice when you can find yourself in a situation where you have less competition, but interestingly enough, this year I was really looking forward to having that matchup, and you know, we really feel as though that our filly is in a position to turn the table, so to speak, and you know, we definitely were looking forward to that opportunity, and it's good for racing. I mean, it really is a good thing to have those rivalries, and you know, it's funny how it goes sometimes. We've all seen it through the course of racing history, where certain years you have two or three really phenomenal racehorses that just happen to be born the same year. So, you know, hopefully for racing and for the connections of Monomoy Girl, you know, she finds her way back to the races and we get a chance to compete against her and show that, you know, we can beat her and you know, we'll see how it all plays out. But it's out of our control. And in the meantime, there's plenty of other good older fillies and mares out there that we're going to have to run against. And one thing I've learned is they don't just give them away to you. So you got to go out there and do your job. You know, we'll see if we meet up with her at the latter part of the year.
Do you have any particular races that you'll be pointing for after Saturday?
So when we came into this current season, when Steve and I talked about it, the Apple Blossom was our target for, you know, getting things started. As soon as this race gets done, we'll sit down and talk about what our roadmap is, working back from, of course, the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year. In terms of specific races getting to the Breeders' Cup, we haven't really sat down and organized that map yet, but I can assure you, once we get through the race this weekend, that'll be the first thing we're going to be doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, press star 1. We have no more questions at this time.
Just before we let you go, I said I just wanted to kind of ask you, I know with Vinay Vidu, this is a filly that you purchased for $80,000 out of the OBS April sale. And at the time, you know, what was it about her that kind of that struck you at the sale, and how soon did she kind of start getting signs that she had that sort of exceptional quality to her?
Yeah, so there were, you know, there's a lot of things that go into the selection process, but with Midnight Bizu, in terms of, you know, what caught my eye, a lot of it had to do with her overall presence on the racetrack. Because if you look at her breeds, you know, when you talk about the breed show and how horses perform, it wasn't like she had an eye-popping, sizzling type of catch-your-eye breed, other than the fact that I thought she really handled herself well on the track before, during, and after, and more so than the breed itself was the way that she galloped out and continued to present herself, and she really leveled out nicely. And once she got through the initial part of the breed, to me, that's when she looked comfortable. She looked like a horse that was going to want to really handle two turns. And then, in addition to that, you know, when I'm looking at horses, I try to see them as much as I can before they go through their breed show, and then more importantly after. And the way she handled herself, and you know, some horses react in a bad way going through that exercise, and to me, she was just the opposite. She relished it and just really embraced, you know, the situation going through the process of being shown. And you know, she had or has just a wonderful balance to her, the way that she put together. So you hope that when you see all that, it all combines to make for success on the racetrack, and obviously it worked out for us.
Yeah, I said she certainly held up her end of the bargain there. So I said, well, Jeff, like I said, I would love to thank you so much for taking the time out to come on and speak with us today. Like I said, continue the best of luck with your entire stable, and you're hoping for more great results this weekend.
Well, thank you so much. It's much appreciated.
Thanks again, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
And last but not least, certainly we are going to check in with Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela, who has the likely favorite for the Arkansas Derby in Omaha Beach. After breaking his maiden in his fifth try, the son of Warport stepped up in class in a big way when he defeated champion Game Winner by a nose in the second division of the Rebel Stakes, and he has continued to impress with back-to-back fill-out workouts since that breakout win. Richard, thank you so much for coming on the call today.
That's my pleasure.
So I understand you are walking him as we speak. Is that right?
Yep.
So all I said, we'll start.
I tried to get Larry Jones to walk him, but he only gave me 5 rounds and quit.
Oh, Larry, you should know better than that right now. So, I said, we'll start with the obvious, since he's obviously arrived there. How did he look to you right now? And not that he's on the ground at Oakland.
No, he looked like he traveled really well. Everything's good.
So, and you know, I know that this is a horse who started off his career on grass, which is not surprising with him being this on a war front. And he had some really decent runs there. What exactly was the catalyst behind you guys ultimately making the decision to go ahead and try him on the dirt?
Well, he finally said to me after his last grass race, "Boss, you ought to run on the grass, not me."
So, when you put him on dirt, I mean, did you see a noticeable difference between his action there on dirt compared to turf that really kind of told you that this is really what his wheelhouse is going to be?
Yeah, you know, he just, when he was getting ready for his first start, he was a good workhorse, but not a show-off. And we were just adding war fronts that didn't so good on the turf. I just thought it might be a good way to start. And he ran well, so I tried it again. And he ran well, so I tried it again. And if you beat me in the head enough times, I finally get it.
And, you know, obviously the fact that you put him in the Rebel off of a maiden win speaks to, you know, how highly that you thought of him, the confidence that that he had in him. When he saw a game winner kind of rage up in him at that quarter pole, were you concerned at all about your horse having enough seasoning and experience to kind of be able to turn him back the way he did?
Oh, never. I was fully confident we were going to win that race. It scared me to death at the eight pole when he looked like game winner was the dominant horse, and then my horse just, you know, looked at him and dug back in and beat him. So I couldn't have been more proud.
Yeah. Like I said, certainly just by seeing the work tab, looks like he's continued to kind of, you know, kind of grow since then. And, you know, like it looks like he's had some really, really impressive work since.
Yes, and he, you know, once he got serious about running, his works have always been like a first-class horse. So it's not a surprise to us that he's that good. Probably the concern I have that someday somebody will say, how did I get him beat so many times?
Yeah. Well, Richard, we'll pause now and throw it back to Vicki and see if she has any questions for the media for you.
Okay.
Again, that is star one to ask a question. And we'll go first to Art Wilson with Southern California News Group.
Hi, Richard. None of us know, you trainers, jockeys, the fans know if a horse can go a mile and a quarter until they actually do it. But what in your mind makes you think that Omaha Beach could get a mile and a quarter?
Well, they can all get a mile and a quarter. It's just a matter of time. Okay. He's so kind and smart. I think he'd do kind of whatever we ask him now that he's a professional racehorse.
Mm-hmm. And what, I'm sure you've seen some of the other three-year-olds run this year in your own backyard, Santa Anita, and, you know, around the country. What are your thoughts? Anybody out there has stepped up and maybe caught your eye?
The colt that won the Santa Anita Derby was very impressive the other day, and game winner still ran a good race. Third time back in the Derby might be his best race. So there's plenty of competition out there, and we're worried about all of them, but I wouldn't trade with anybody.
Right. Okay. Best of luck to you, Richard.
Well, thank you. Okay.
Again, press star one to ask a question. We'll go next to Alan Carrasco with TDN.
Hey, Richard. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm standing here back to the San Vicente. I'm out in Arlington Park in the morning, so it's great to speak with you. It's been 15 years since you have been Churchill with the Derby. You're not the kind of guy that pulls the horse on the show. You're the kind of guy that lets the horse take care of it. To be able to get the opportunity to get back to the Derby, how does that feel for you?
I'm sorry, I'm shaking a little bit out of here. Sorry.
Say it again? But it's been 15 years since you made the Derby, and you're the kind of guy that lets the horse get you there, and just what does it mean to you to get back to the Derby?
Yeah, well, the 15 years is significant. That's the time they gave me when they told me the last time I came, don't come back again for 15 years. So the time's up, and I'm back.
And your relationship with Mr. Porter, you trained Battle Valley for a few years ago. How many horses exactly do you have with him?
I think we've got four.
And can you explain the jockey shifting for the Rebel? Mike was on the gray, and Flavian has been riding your horse, but Flavian was on the gray and getting the Rebel. How did that come to pass that Mike rode your horse that day?
I'm having a little trouble understanding you, but I think you asked about the rider change into the Rebel.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, Flavian Pratt had committed to the Rebel to Jerry Hollendorfer, so I had signed up Mike to ride him in the Rebel even before it split, so that this was going on. Obviously, Mr. Porter likes Mike Smith very well, so there was no second thought of what to do. And so, being that we had the call going in, he was going to write him no matter what.
Okay. I'm a little bit under the weather and the cold, so I apologize to say, couldn't understand that issue, but that's a walk.
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
Again, that is star one to ask your question. And we'll go next to Tom Dutel with Horse Race Insider.
Yeah, Richard, you're one of the most accomplished and influential people on the West Coast. What are your impressions about what's going on out there now? What would you like to see happen? And it's been a theme on this call today. What's your feelings about the no whip rule?
It'd be an interesting experiment. I can sure see not over whipping horses. Or whipping a horse that's just stopping and out of gas. There's no sense beating them up. I think adjustments are coming and probably should be. Going to zero is probably not going to satisfy the betting public, which is very important. I'd hate to think of a guy having his last horse on the pick six, nose to nose, and the boy couldn't do anything to help encourage it across the wire, what the guy might do. But it will all work out. I think, it'll be tried and hopefully adjustments made that'll make the game better.
Earlier on this call...
So whatever they are, I'm happy to work with, okay?
Yeah. Well, earlier on this call, John Court said that he thought that if there were no whips last Saturday in the Santa Anita Derby, the outcome would have been different, particularly on the winner coming from as far back as he did. Do you have any feelings on that?
I didn't watch it with that in mind. It was a very good race. But, again, it will be interesting to see, the experiment, how it goes. Hopefully the betting public will be patient and ride it out a little bit.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, saying that, I don't maybe add just a little bit there. Saying that, it's a question being forced on us by the animal rights people and then the government officials. So it's not something we all just thought to do, but maybe there's something good will come of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess as long as you said that, I mean, it is kind of being put. What are your feelings about people who look at those in racing, which we know isn't true, as if they're, just totally indifferent to the horse? I know the love on the backstretch, and when I see that, I know it annoys me. It's got to infuriate someone like you who spent your life in the game.
Yes, and, my horses are my family, just same as most of the people that work for me. It's our best friends, it's our relatives. This is our life. And they mean the world to us. Saying that, there's always going to be some bad apple in the bunch. Just in nature, you can't help that. You do the best you can to weed them out. Racing maybe needs to do a better job of showing the good in it rather than wait for the criticism and then trying to defend ourselves.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Again, press star one to ask a question. And we have no more questions at this time.
All right, Richard, I know you literally have your hands full there trying to get your horse ready for this weekend, but I do want to thank you again for taking the time out to come on to this call and speak with us and share your thoughts with everything.
Okay, sorry I was a little late there.
Not a problem, Richard.
Right at the, Okay, all right, thank you.
No problem, and Richard, can you continue best of luck with everything, and hopefully all goes well. We look forward to seeing you in Louisville in a few weeks.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Thanks again.
Okay, bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, that will do it for this week's NTRA National Media Teleconference. An audio file of this call will be up later today on NTRA.com, and a full transcript will be available tomorrow. Once again, we would like to thank our guests, John Court, Jeff Bloom, and Richard Mandela, and thanks to you all for coming on today. We will be back on April 25th to preview the Derby. And now back to our operator to wrap things up.
That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.